Okay, this week's Sedra Tetzaveh is unique to a certain degree insofar that Moshe Rabbeinu's name does not appear in the parsha. He's only referred to as you, the Ata Tetzaveh. And there are many reasons given. I'm going to tell you a few of them and then I'm going to tell you what I think. The most famous is something that's brought down in the Medrash Nehalam, Zohar Chodosh, that we know that a klala that a chacham says, even if it's said on condition and the condition isn't fulfilled, still the power of speech that a chacham, a tzaddik has an effect. Yaakov Avinu said, whoever stole your trophim should die, and in the end Rachel died. He didn't know it was Rachel, he didn't mean her, chas v'shalom, but kilel haschacham afilu al tnai miskayim. Moshe Rabbeinu, when the Rabbanu Shalom was threatening to wipe out Klal Yisrael after the Chet Ego, he said, forgive them, v'imayin, and if you don't, mecheni no misifrecho asher kosafta, wipe me out of your book, erase me from your book. So the Gemara really says that it means the book of life. But the simple meaning can also mean the book of the Torah. Take my name out of the Torah. If I'm not successful in saving them and the people get annihilated, then what kind of leader am I? Erase my name from the Torah. So even though the Rabbanu Shalom did not annihilate the Jewish people and he forgave them, still Moshe Rabbeinu's klala took effect. And therefore he was erased from one parsha in the Torah. Okay, now why this parsha? Why this parsha? So some say, more I think tongue-in-cheek, that where did Moshe Rabbeinu say this? In Parshas Kisisa, right? Which is next week's Sedra, after Tetzaveh. So the Rabbanu Shalom said, okay, I'm not going to erase him this week. Let's wait till next week. Next week, he said, wait, let's next week. He kept pushing it off and pushing it off until he ran out of Sedras and came back to the last Sedra from Kisisa, which is Tetzaveh. So he erased his name from that Sedra. It was the last chance. Starting with Kisisa, Tetzaveh is the last in the order. Another thing they say is that it says Sifrecha. Mecheni no mi Sifrecha. With a Chaf. The Chaf is 20. There are 20 parshios between Bereshis and Tetzaveh. This is the 20th parsha. So, Misifrecha, Sefer Chaf, the 20th Sedra. The Chidah in Kisei Rachamim says an interesting thing. He says that really Moshe Rabbeinu's name doesn't appear in many Sedras. But the other ones, there's no question why. He doesn't appear in the whole book of Bereshis, because he wasn't born yet. It doesn't appear in a lot of the Sedras of Devarim, because Moshe is talking. Therefore, it's not, his name doesn't appear in Atem Nitzavim, Shoftim, Re'ei, Kiseitzei, the whole book of Bereshis, Ekev and Tetzaveh. Now comes the interesting part, right? The letters of those Sedras. Atem Nitzavim is Aleph. Shoftim, Shin. Re'ei, Reish. Kiseitzei, Chaf. Bereshis, Beis. And Ekev, the, what's it called? The, is what's it called? The Ekev, you have to use the last letter. The Beis. And Tetzav is a Tav. Comes out to the words, Asher Kosafta. The letters of the words, Asher Kosafta. Mecheni no misifrecha Asher Kosafta. So the Sedras that spell out Asher Kosafta in the Rosh Tevos are the Sedras of Moshe Rabbeinu's name is left out of. But the main one is Tetzaveh. The Vilna Gaon says another idea. He says that Parshas Tetzaveh always falls out around Zayin Adar. even in a leap year, surely in a regular year, Zayin Adar is Friday, and Shabbos is Parshas Tetzaveh. Zayin Adar was the birthday and yahrzeit of Moshe Rabbeinu. So his name is left out of the parsha that falls on his yahrzeit. It's a hint that he's no longer here. There's only one problem with that. It's cute. But, like I told you, the order of the parshios is only according to Minag Bavel. According to Minag Eretz Yisrael, they didn't finish the Torah in 3 years. Parshas Tetzaveh did not fall out Zayin Adar. Not every year, at least. Okay. The Oznaim L'Torah says another idea. He says, since this parsha falls out on the yahrzeit and birthday of Moshe Rabbeinu, we want to show that our manhigim are not gods, as other religions make their leaders into gods. And therefore, we don't celebrate his birthday and his death day as they do in other religions. And not only that, on Moshe Rabbeinu's birthday and your side, his name isn't even mentioned in the Torah. They point out that even though Moshe Rabbeinu's name is not mentioned, but there's a hint to his inner self. How so? Moshe is spelled Mem Shin He. If you spell out those letters, Mem is Mem Mem, Shin is Shin Yud Nun, and He is what's called He Aleph. Okay? So there are 101 psukim in Parshas Tetzaveh. The pnimius of the name Moshe is the letters that are hidden. The Mem from Mem Mem, the Yud Nun from Shin, and the Aleph from Hey. Okay, Mem is Mem Mem, Shin is Shin Yud Nun, and Hey is Hey Aleph. So the hidden letters are the Aleph from the Hey, the Yud Nun from the Shin, and the Mem from the Mem Mem. If you add up the numerical value of those hidden letters, the Mem, Yud, Nun, and Aleph, it's 101. So there are 101 psukim that hint to the hidden part of Moshe's name. The Balaturim and others say, since Moshe Rabbeinu, the kahuna was taken away from him, therefore the parsha where the kohanim were installed, his name isn't mentioned. I want to explain the following. It's very difficult that Moshe Rabbeinu should be punished because he was willing to totally self-efface himself for the sake of Klal Yisrael, and he said, erase me from your book, and because of that the Rabban Shem erased him from the Torah. It was a tremendously big good thing that he did. Why should he be punished for that and his name be taken out of the Torah? So I want to explain the following. Let's go back to why Moshe Rabbeinu was not the Kohen, why Aaron was the Kohen. It says that Moshe Rabbeinu said to the Ribbono Shel Olam, Shlach no bi'at tishlach. He refused to accept the mantle of leadership in Mitzrayim, and he gave all different excuses until finally the real excuse came out in the end, and that was, I don't want to hurt my brother's feelings. Until now, Aaron was the one that the Ribbono Shel Olam used for all of the shlichios in Mitzrayim. And now the big shlichus is going to happen of taking them out of Mitzrayim, and Aaron's going to be passed over, and Moshe's going to do it. He felt that his brother Aaron would be slighted, would be insulted, would be hurt. And he didn't want to hurt him. So the Rabban Hashem got angry at Moshe Rabbeinu for that. And he said, Aaron Achicha HaKohen, HaLevi, Aaron Achicha HaLevi. Aaron was supposed to be the Levi, and you were supposed to be the Kohen. But now, because you said this, Aaron's going to be the Kohen, and you're going to be the Levi. So it doesn't make sense. Moshe Rabbeinu, the Bali Musar say that look how important it is not to hurt somebody's feelings. Moshe Rabbeinu was willing to forego saving the Jewish people and just not to hurt Aaron's feelings. Tremendous Musar. And he gets punished for that? Because of that he lost the kahuna? Why? Why would Moshe Rabbeinu be punished for being careful about Aaron's feelings? So I think perhaps you could say the following. The Gemara says, "Hachoshed b'ksherim loke begufo." Somebody who suspects someone else wrongly of doing something wrong, so he himself is punished. He is, his own body is hit. Now you can understand that as a punishment. You suspected somebody wrongly, so you get punished. But I think it's much deeper than that. The idea is the following. If I suspect somebody of doing something wrong, and they are, what's it called? I'm not suspecting them wrongly, because they had a mind, or they were thinking about it, or they were capable of doing it. So then my suspicion came from them. They brought me to the suspicion. But if I suspect somebody wrongly, and there's no grounds for that suspicion, then why did I suspect them? You know why? Because I transferred what I thought about myself to them. Meaning the following. I see somebody sneaking out of a house at night, okay? And I right away suspect that they stole something from the house. They're ganav, okay? Now, if the person is, what's it called, thought about it, was thinking about it, is capable of it, so the reason I suspected him is because he made me suspicious. But let's say the person was something totally different. Person was sneaking out of the house because, I don't know, he had to go save somebody's life or whatever. He didn't want to wake his wife up. Okay? Something completely, and there's no reason to suspect him. Then where did I get the suspicion from? You know why? Because I've thought of stealing sometimes, or I know that I could, in such a situation, perhaps steal if I could get away with it. And I transferred my feelings to him. I saw what he did, and I know if I would be doing that, it would be possible that I was stealing. So I transferred. It didn't come from him because there was no reason to suspect him. So where did it come from? Transference of thinking, well, if I was doing that, I probably would have been stolen. Same thing with Moshe Rabbeinu. The Torah is made that when Aaron HaKohen heard that Moshe Rabbeinu was chosen to be the Goel, not only did he have a smile on his face on the outside, but inside he was eating his heart out. No. V'ra'acha v'samach belibo. He'll see you and he'll be happy in his heart. He won't be slighted. He'll have no feeling, bichlal, that anything wrong. He won't be slighted at all. Why? Because there are two levels of serving Hashem. It's a famous maisa with the Rebbe Reb Zusha. They asked the Rebbe Reb Zusha if he had the opportunity to trade places with Avraham Avinu, would he do it? Okay, I don't usually bring rayas from Hasidic maisas, especially one they have a big question on. Why didn't they ask Avraham Avinu if he wanted to change with his Reb Zusha? Let her not ask Reb Zusha if he wanted to change with Avraham Avinu. But in any case, Reb Zusha thought about it and he said, no, I wouldn't do it. Why? Because what would God gain? It'd still be one Avraham Avinu and one me. I have to be me. I have to be Avraham Avinu. I can be me. As long as there's one Avraham Avinu in the world and one me, God gets what he needs. I have to be Avraham Avinu. Aaron HaKohen reached that level where it didn't make a difference if it's me doing it or Moshe doing it. The ikar is, who's doing for the Rabban Shalom? That's called the Madrega of Ahava. Total selflessness. But a person's not on that level, it makes a difference. I'd rather be the one doing it than somebody else doing it. Moshe Rabbeinu suspected that Aaron would be insulted if what's it called, if he accepted the job. That means he was choshed that Aaron already was still on a lower level where it made a difference if it was him or someone else. He was should be the one. That's a lower level. It's not the highest level of total selflessness. Now the Torah is made that Aaron HaKohen had no thought of that. Through and through in his heart, it didn't bother him at all. So why did Moshe Rabbeinu suspect him that it would bother him? Because Moshe Rabbeinu said, if I was the older brother, and he was the younger brother, and he got the shlichus, I'd feel bad. And that's why he assumed that Aaron would feel bad under the same circumstances. So therefore, where was the real problem? In Moshe Rabbeinu, not in Aaron. Because Moshe Rabbeinu knew that if the tables were turned, he'd feel bad. A Kohen is God's representative. The Kohen has to be totally selfless. He's not doesn't exist. He's an extension of the Ribbono Shel Olam. Moshe couldn't be the Kohen anymore because since he suspected Aaron, and Aaron wasn't fit to be suspected, that means that the Moshe Rabbeinu got his suspicion from transferring how he would feel to Aaron. And if you would feel slighted, that means you can't be a Kohen. You're not selfless. Aaron is selfless. He could be the Kohen. However, Moshe Rabbeinu corrected that fault. When did he correct the fault? When he said, Mecheni no misifrecha, Ribbono Shel Olam, if you're not going to save the Jewish people, then don't save, then erase me, because I exist only as an extension of them. And if they don't exist, I don't exist. So Moshe Rabbeinu reached a level of selflessness when he said, Mecheni no misifrecha. Okay. Moshe Rabbeinu therefore became a Kohen, but he lost the kahuna for his children. But he himself was a Kohen. When the Torah installed the Kohanim, one could think that Moshe Rabbeinu felt slighted. I lost the kahuna, Aaron's being the Kohen. So the Ribbono Shel Olam went out of his way, because he said Mecheni no misifrecha, and he corrected that flaw. It's not a punishment anymore. It's a schar for Moshe Rabbeinu. The Ribbono Shel Olam went out of his way and left Moshe Rabbeinu's name out of the parsha where the Kohanim were installed to show me that Moshe Rabbeinu had no hard feelings. It wasn't Aaron or Moshe. It was just another you. He's another you. What does it make of this you that's a Kohen or this you that's a Kohen? It doesn't make a difference who it is, as long as there's a Kohen who's serving the Ribbono Shel Olam. And the Torah wanted to testify that Moshe had no ill feeling, and therefore left his name out. He's just an atah, just another you. So it's not a punishment, it's a reward. Because he said, Mecheni no misifrecha, and he reached the level of selflessness and corrected why he lost the kahuna to begin with, in this parsha where he had to install Aaron, the Torah calls him just you to show us that he didn't feel himself. It's Aaron and not Moshe, just another you. That's it. Yeah. Okay. Since Moshe Rabbeinu lost the kahuna because he wasn't selfless. Because he said, you know, the tables were turned and I was the older brother and he was the younger brother and he was given the shlichus, I'd feel bad. So I assume he feels bad. But Moshe Rabbeinu, basically Aaron had no thought like that. He was fit to be a Kohen. But Moshe Rabbeinu transferred how he would feel to Aaron. So therefore something was wrong with Moshe Rabbeinu. He couldn't be the Kohen. But he corrected that. And he reached a level of total selflessness when he said, Mecheni no misifrecha. In order to show that, the Ribbono Shel Olam did Moshe a favor. That when the Kohanim were installed, and one could think that Moshe felt bad, that Aaron was the Kohen and not him, the Ribbono Shel Olam showed that Moshe Rabbeinu reached a level of selflessness. And in that parsha, where he had to install Aaron, he didn't consider himself Moshe and him Aaron. I'm just another you. And it makes no difference if Aaron's the Kohen or I'm the Kohen, as long as it's a Kohen. So that in order to give Moshe Rabbeinu a schar, to let everybody know that he corrected the fault that he had before, the Torah left his name out of Tetzaveh to show that he reached a level of selflessness even when it was installing Aaron as the Kohen. Okay. anything else? Don't think so. No. Okay. Next. Any questions on this? We'll get to the Seder itself. Okay. Let's speak about Shatnez and Big Day Kahuna. In many of the clothing of the Kohen, of Kohen Gadol for sure, and it's a question whether the Kohen Hedyot, a question of Kohen Hedyot also, the belt that the Kohen Hedyot wore, was Shatnez. They were, what's it called, linen and wool together, which is awesome. The same Torah that said you can't wear Shatnez in a regular garment, but by Big Day Kahuna and by Tzitzis, Shatnez is mutter. You're allowed to wear wool tzitzis on a linen garment. Min HaTorah. The Rabbanan said you can't. But Min HaTorah, it's okay. And the Big Day Kahuna had to be made, some of them, out of shatnez, out of wool and linen together. So even though shatnez is a chok, okay, but every chok has some idea behind it too. What is the idea behind shatnez? The Zohar says that in the beginning of the world, Cain brought a carbon from flax, from linen. He was a farmer. He brought his flax as a carbon, something he couldn't eat, and it was inferior, and his carbon wasn't accepted. And Hevel brought from the choice firstborn sheep. Sheep is wool, flax is linen. And way back in the beginning of the world, wool and linen couldn't get together. Cain killed Hevel. They argued. They were fighting about covet. Who's going to get the covet of having the Beis HaMikdash in his portion of the world? Who's going to have the covet of having Eretz Yisrael? Who's going to have the movable property? Who's going to have the land? Everybody wanted their own covet. Begadim, clothing, is a covet for the person. But clothing gives you covet. In fact, the Gemara says, La'olam lo korosi lebegodai, begodai ela lebegodai machbedusi. That which gives me honor. Clothing honors the person. Shows your honor, who you are. Like a uniform. So when it comes to personal honor, wool and linen couldn't get together. So you can't wear wool and linen. It is a throwback to the machlokus of Cain and Hevel that led to murder. However, where the beged is not my covet, but the beged is a covet for the Rabbanu Shel Olam, like tzitzis, like Big Day Kahuna, they're the whole reason of shatnez doesn't apply. They're just the opposite. You can get wool and linen together because you're not wearing a garment for your honor. You're wearing it for the honor of the Rabbanu Shel Olam. There, the wool and the linen can get together. Okay. Now I want to speak more about clothing in general and tznius. Okay, I think last week we spoke a little bit about tznius, the concept of tznius, did we? I don't remember now. And the aron being gold on the inside and gold on the outside. No, I don't think we spoke about tznius though. We didn't speak about it. We spoke about the mishkan being like a kala with a, why the mishkan was a tzanua. No, I didn't think so. So let's speak about tznius and then we'll see how it applies to clothing. Many people think that tznius is covering the body because it's risque, there's something wrong with it, and you have to cover it, it's not nice. If that would be the case, then we should surely cover animals' bodies. If human bodies are not okay, animals' bodies most certainly is the case. And I don't know anybody who's machmer not to go to the zoo unless the animals are dressed. Maybe tomorrow there'll be somebody like that, but today not. In fact, the only place I know in the world where they dress their pets is in Los Angeles. And that has nothing to do with tznius because they don't dress themselves. Tznius is not that there's something wrong with the body. Body is a bria of the Rabbanu Shel Olam. There's no reason to have to cover. There's nothing wrong with the body. It's not the idea of tznius at all. Before the chait of Adam and Chava, it was clear that the ikr of a human being is his neshama. In fact, that's what we are. We are neshamos. We are not bodies with little Casper the Friendly Ghost flitting around inside of us. We are neshamas that happen to be wearing a suit of clothing called a body. As long as we were neshamos in a spiritual world for thousands of years from the creation, we lived, all of us, in a spiritual world. We don't remember it, but we were there, and we could function very nice without a body. We could see without eyes and hear without ears and get along without arms and legs. When we came into this physical world, we needed a body to be able to function. In a physical world, the neshama can't function without a body. It's like an astronaut. As long as the astronaut is on the earth, he can function very nicely without any special apparatus or special suit. He goes into outer space where there's no oxygen. He needs an oxygen apparatus to breathe. There's no air pressure. He needs a pressurized suit. There's no sound waves. He needs a radio to speak through. Comes back to earth, takes off the suit. As long as we were neshamas in a spiritual world, we could function in a spiritual world without eyes, ears, legs, arms. We came into a physical world. We need those things to put on a suit to be able to function in a physical world. We go back to the spiritual world, we leave the suit here. That's one of the reasons that we express mourning by tearing our clothing. Because it shows it's only the clothing that's been torn away, but the essence of the person is still there. As long as Adam and Chava did not sin, which didn't last too long, it was clear that the neshama is the main thing and the body serves the neshama. Once they sinned and they used their bodies not in the best interest of their neshama, now it wasn't clear anymore. Who said the neshama is the ikar? The body can function against the neshama. Maybe the body's the ikar. Not only that, maybe there is no neshama. You don't see any neshama, you see a body. So maybe there's only a body. So in order to distract attention from the body, which could give you the false impression that's all there is, we distract attention from the body by covering it and making the statement there's more here than meets the eye. I am not a body. I'm a neshama. And the body serves my neshama, and therefore do not get carried away with the body. Realize there's more here than meets the eye. And that's why an animal doesn't have to have its body covered, because there is nothing more. What you see is what you get. So there's nothing wrong with the body. But if the ikar is not the body, the ikar is the neshama. And the body could give the impression that that's the ikar, then cover it, distract attention from it, and understand that the ikar is the neshama, which you can't see. That is tznius. Wherever there is an inner kedusha, and one could be misled by the externals to think that that is the ikar or that's all there is, we cover the externals as if to make the statement there's more here than meets the eye. That is what tznius is. And that's the word lahatznia, means to hide something away for safekeeping. It does not mean to what's it called, to hide away because something wrong with it. It means you're hiding something because it's you're treasuring it. The body is hidden, not because something wrong with it, but because its importance is that it serves the neshama. But if it doesn't serve the neshama, it's only a body, then you're an animal. Then the body is very much worthless. It's only worthwhile if it serves as the means for the neshama to be able to work, to express itself in this world. So you hide it away because it's something worthwhile, and you don't want to ruin it by exposing it. By exposing it, you're going to ruin it because you're going to give people the feeling that that's all there is. That's the ikar, and mainly you're an animal. Therefore, it says tznius applies to three things especially. The Mishkan, when the Mishkan was finished, the Rabbanu Shalom said, Kan Yofa Hatznias. And the Mishkan was covered with coverings that looked like a bride. A veil in the front and a train in the back. That's how the coverings of the Mishkan were. Now what does the Mishkan have to do with Tznias? It's not erotic, the Mishkan. Where's the Tznias? Well, the idea is that I once heard a story of a family of Rav Shalom Shvadron Zatzal were by the Kosel on Shabbos, and they saw an Israeli writing a kvittel and putting it in the wall on Shabbos. So they went over to him. They said, "You probably think that, you know, somebody's deathly ill, and you think that it's pikuach nefesh, and you're allowed to write on Shabbos to save his life by putting a kvittel in the wall, but it's not true." He said, no, it's nothing to do with that. So I'm a captain of an Israeli soccer team, and we have a championship match this week, and I was putting a wish into the wall that we win. Now, if that's what the Mishkan, or the Beis HaMikdash, or the Kosel Maravi is, right, mirror, mirror on the wall, or wall, wall on the ground, right, then it's Avodah Zorah. What makes that wall important? The Shechinah is there. It's not a wishing wall. So if you get carried away by the externals, and you forget that the main thing is the inner Kedusha that's there, then you're turning it into Avodah Zorah. So therefore it has to be covered. The Mishkan especially, which was gold, whatever, had to be covered. Next place where Tznius is extra special is by Talmidei Chachamim. A Talmud Chacham, the Rambam says, has to be extra tzanua in how he eats, how he dresses. Why? The Talmud Chacham is more erotic than somebody else. Why does that be more tzanua? Because there's a mitzvah to fear and stand in awe of a Talmud Chacham. Es Hashem Elokecha Tira L'Rabos Talmidei Chachamim. That's very dangerous. Because if you address that to the personality of the Talmud Chacham, it's almost Avodah Zorah. You're making a personality cult about a person. The Talmud Chacham, you have to fear and stand in awe of his Torah, not him. Not his personality, but what he represents. And therefore the Talmud Chacham has to distract attention from his externals to make the statement, there's more here than meets the eye. What you have to stand in awe of is not me, but the Torah that I possess. And therefore he distracts attention from his externals in order to make the statement, there's more here than meets the eye. You have a mitzvah of yira, mamish like the Rabbanu Shel Olam. Don't direct that towards my personality, towards my external. Direct it towards the internal Torah that I possess. The third place where tznius is extra special is by women. Because in the secular world, women are basically judged on their external attributes. Even in this liberated, right, progressive world, they still have Miss America, Miss Israel, Miss Universe pageants. And even though they say that they have become much more refined, and they have the women talking about their careers and reading their poetry or whatever, but they do it all in bathing suits, which has me believe that it's not the poetry and the careers that's the ikar. So therefore, in the secular world, women are mostly judged on their external attributes. Whereas from a Torah standpoint, women are the foundation of Kedushas Yisrael. And that's not just said to make you feel good, it's true. Because what factor, unless you're a convert, what factor alone determines whether any human being in this world has a holy Jewish neshama or not? What is the factor that determines that? Your mother. Your father could have been Genghis Khan, but if your mother was a simple, plain, ordinary Jewess, you're Jewish, and you have a Jewish neshama. If your father was Moshe Rabbeinu, but your mother wasn't Jewish, you're not Jewish. And you don't have a Kedushas Yisrael unless you convert. So what is it that determines Kedushas Yisrael? A mother. And up until recently, mothers were women. So women are what? Women are what determine Kedushas Yisrael. So therefore, a woman has to be extra tzanua, because she could give the impression that all I am is a body. So she distracts attention from her body in order to make the statement, there's more here than meets the eye. And that's why a beged is called a beged, because it comes from the word bogade, to be a traitor. The body was a traitor against the neshama. And from that time, you had to cover the body in order to make the statement that the ikar is not the body, the ikar is what you can't see. That is one aspect of tznius. However, there's another aspect. Because if that would be the case, that we distract attention from the body, then the best kind of tznius would be to wear tents. Like the Arabs or whatever, this cult of Jewish women. We should wear clothing that completely hides your body. Right? Wear a tent with these hoops around you, with a head covering and just two eyes, and that's it. Right? And nobody knows you have a body. You look like a little tent walking around the street. And that's how men should dress, and women. And all they have is these asexual tents running around, and nobody knows if you have a body altogether. But that's not what tznius is. Because there is an idea also of the externals being important. Once you distract attention from them, there's an idea of now showing those externals in a tasteful way, because that then represents what the real inner beauty is. And the Torah gives importance to beauty, even physical beauty of men and women. Yosef, the Torah goes out of its way to say he was Yifei Toar v'Yifei Mar, a handsome person. Sara Imenu, right, was as beautiful at 7 as at 20 as she was at 7. Who cares what she was? She was Sara Imenu. Made a difference if she was an ugly hag or she was beautiful? Who cares? Torah cares. It says about Rachel, Esther, beauty is important. The question is, what is beauty? Because beauty is very subjective and really depends on cultural subjectivity. Because what's beautiful in one society is not beautiful in another society. I'll give you an example. There's a tribe in Africa called the Ubangis. The Ubangis have a quaint custom, and you'll be very happy you were not brought up there. Then, when their daughters are young, they put a half saucer in their lip, between their gum and their upper lip, and it stretches their upper lip. As they grow, they put a bigger half saucer, and their lip goes a little bit more. By the time they're your age, their upper lip sticks out about a foot. You ever see a Ubangi, mamish, an upper lip sticking out about a foot? You look up an encyclopedia. And they consider that beautiful. If you do not have an upper lip that sticks out a foot by the Ubangis, you'll never find a shidduch. Now, in America, if you have an upper lip that sticks out a foot, your parents will send you to the orthodontist, spend thousands of dollars to correct that, or you'll never find a shidduch. Okay? So what's beautiful? An upper lip that sticks out or not? In fact, it says by Esther, Motzei Schein Be'enei Koro, everybody thought she was beautiful. How could that be? Did she have a lip that stuck out of her foot? That she was beautiful to the Ubangis. If she didn't, she was beautiful to the Americans, but not the Ubangis. How could she be beautiful to everybody? The answer is, and also by Sarah, it says she was as beautiful at 20 as she was at 7. Coming from the other side of the fence, a 20-year-old girl is prettier than a 7-year-old girl. So what does it say? She was as beautiful at 20 as she was at 7? But the answer is, there's a certain universal beauty that's not dependent on subjective cultural likes and dislikes. It's the beauty of innocence, of youth. It's a beauty that is worldwide, universal. Sara Imenu maintained that same beauty at 20 as she had at 7 of being a very innocent young girl. That beauty everybody recognizes. It is the external expression of that inner kedusha, that inner beauty that a person has. That is the second function of clothing. Clothing, on the one hand, have to cover the externals and say this is not the ikar. At the same time, it has to be in such a tasteful way that it expresses that inner kedusha externally. That is tznius. Tznius is covering the body, but covering in a way that gives the message of what that inner kedusha is. Not hiding it, but covering it in a tasteful way that can be attractive, but not attracting. There's a very big difference. It's not to attract attention to the externals and to make you forget about the internals. but it's attractive where it expresses the beauty of those internals in a very tasteful external way. Yeah.
So then why didn't Hashem make everyone look the same so everyone has equal opportunity to express the inside? If some people start off looking nicer than others, then why is that?
Because the truth is that people look nice to the people who are supposed to see niceness in them. There is no one standard of what beauty is. Because, as my mother-in-law, Allah Hashem, used to say, every pot has a cover. Right? Meaning, everybody finds their person. That to one person, what's it called, that man or woman may be, look ugly, but to the other one, they look, their beauty is in the eye of the beholder. It's 100% true. Right? And that's why the same type of beauty or handsomeness isn't attractive to the same people. It's a very subjective thing. And because people are different and their inner kedusha is different too. Everybody has different milas and different chisronos or whatever, and their neshamas are different. Kishem she'ein partzufeyem domos, kach ein deoseyem shavos. Just like people's faces aren't the same, their ideas, their inner makeup is not the same. So the inner makeup, the outer makeup reflects that inner makeup, and it's all beautiful, it's just beautiful to different people. Different people pick up on different things. Right? It's a fact of the world. Okay. In any case, so that is why by the Big Day Kahuna we find that it had two functions. One, lekadsho lekahanoli, to bring out the kedusha of the Kohen. Do not think that the Kohen is just a body, but there's an inner kedusha that is what the kahuna is. So the clothing covers the Kohen and tells you, don't get carried away by his body, because there's more here, and the begotten represented the inner kedusha of the Kohen. The Choshen represented his perfect heart, and the begotten represented the inner milus of the Kohen. So on the one hand, they covered up the body. He's not a body. The kahuna is a spiritual force that not visible. Don't get attracted by what you can see. Cover it up and realize there's more than meets the eye. At the same time, the clothing were the cover of the tiferes. They were for the honor and glory. They projected that inner kedusha externally. When you looked at the Big Day Kahuna, you saw that inner kedusha. So it gave you the feeling, don't get carried away with the externals. At the same time, understand what the internals are by seeing it conveyed through the beautiful begadim that the Kohen wore. So it had both functions. And in that respect, the begadim were called mechabdusi. They are what gives me honor. They're not the ikr, but they portray what the person is. When you wear a uniform, a policeman who wears a uniform, you relate to him a lot better than a policeman who's in Bermuda shorts. A doctor who's wearing a white coat, right, you relate to him more as a doctor than a doctor who walks around in a golf uniform making his rounds in the hospital. The clothing doesn't make you a doctor, nor does it make you a policeman. But a policeman who wears a uniform, a doctor who wears his uniform, projects what he is externally. It doesn't make you that, but it projects what you are. So clothing and tznius is a two-pronged thing. One, to cover the externals, and the other, to cover it in a way that projects what the internals are. You can cover every aspect of your body that has to be covered and still not be tzanua, because the way that you cover it gives a message the opposite of what that inner kedusha is. And if you don't cover up, then you can't be tzanua either, because there are certain parts of the body that are attracting both men and women, and direct your attention to the externals of the person, right? That's erva. All the ideas of externalism, erva, is what's it called, is external thing. Arayas, all of that is external, uncovered things. Pritzus is broken, what's it called, what's on the outside. But Tznius is what's on the inside. So if you don't cover all the parts of the body that are attracting, right, and the Rabbanu Shalom made certain parts of the body attracting to the other sex, so then you get carried away with the externals. So you have to cover it. At the same time, you're covering it not because there's something wrong with it, but because that's not the ikkar. The ikkar is, don't be distracted by the external, realize the internal is the ikkar. And therefore, cover the externals in such a way that it reflects and conveys the beauty of that internal kedusha. When you look at the person, you see that they represent something refined, something holy, and so on. That's the idea.